The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi there. This is Janice Peary from the North Carolina Reading Service, formerly known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Our first book today is First Tomato by Rosemary Wells. In the summer, as it starts to get hot, we start to garden. And people love to grow tomatoes and lettuce and green beans and all sorts of wonderful things. So this story is called The First Tomato. Claire was a little bunny rabbit. Claire ate only 3 spoons of cornflakes for breakfast. On her way to school, her shoes were filled with snow because it was winter. By 11 in the morning, math felt like it had been going on for 2 hours. Lunch was Claire's least favorite, bologna sandwiches. At playtime, because it was winter, they had to have inside the gym. At playtime, Claire was the only girl not able to do a cartwheel. Oh, that felt bad, didn't it? After school, once again, the bus was late. Claire needs a visit to the bunny planet. So she sits on the bench and closes her eyes and starts to think about something she calls the bunny planet. Far beyond the moon and stars, 20 light years south of Mars, spins the gentle bunny planet, and the bunny queen is Janet. Janet is the bus driver, and there is the bunny queen holding Claire in her arms, sleeping soundly in the bunny queen's arms on the bunny planet. Janet, the bunny queen, says to Claire, "Come in, come in. Here's the day that should have been. I hear my mother calling when the summer wind blows. Go out in the garden in your old, old clothes. Pick me some runner beans and sugar snap peas. Find a ripe tomato and bring it to me, please. A ruby red tomato is hanging on the vine. If my mother didn't want it, the tomato would be mine. It smells of rain and steamy earth and the hot June sun. In the whole tomato garden, it's the only ripe one. I close my eyes and breathe in its fat red smell. I wish that I could eat it now and never, never tell. But I save it from my mother without another look. I wash the beans and shell the peas and watch my mother cook. I hear my mother calling as the summer wind blows. I've made you first tomato soup because I love you so." And there is Claire sitting and enjoying her wonderful soup made out of the first tomato of the summer. And then Claire's big warm bus comes at last. The dream is over. Out of her window, Claire sees the bunny planet near the evening star in the snowy sky. "It was there all along," says Claire. Wasn't that a beautiful dream to make a cold, cold winter day much better? The next story is Petunia, written by Roger Duvoisin. Now, Petunia is a nice, big, fat goose. She's all white, and she is very silly. In the meadow early one morning, Petunia, the silly goose, went strolling. She ate a bug here and clipped off a clover leaf there, and she picked at the dewdrops on the goldenrod leaves. Then suddenly she saw something she had never seen before in the meadow. What was it? Petunia stole closer and closer and sniffed at it from all sides. "By Goosey Gander," she said, "it does not smell like food for a goose. But I believe I have seen such a thing before. Yes, I have seen one under Bill's arm when he came out of school. It's a book. That's it. It's a book. Come to think of it, the other day I heard Mr. Pumpkin telling Bill that books are very precious. He who owns books and loves them is wise. That is what he said. He who owns books and loves them is wise, repeated Petunia to herself. And she thought as hard and as long as she could. Well, then, she said at last, if I take this book with me and love it, I will be wise too. And no one will ever call me a silly goose, ever, ever again. So Petunia picked up the book and off she went with it. She slept with it. She swam with it. And knowing that she was so wise, Petunia also became proud and prouder and prouder, so proud that her neck stretched out several notches, and there she is with her nose in the air. It was King the Rooster who first noticed the change in Petunia. He said, maybe Petunia is not so silly after all. She has a book, and she looks so wise that it must be so. And the other animals began to believe in Petunia's wisdom, too. They asked her for advice and opinions, and Petunia was glad to help, even when she was not asked. Petunia grew still prouder, and her neck stretched out another notch. At the chicken coop, Ida the hen was cackling excitedly among her chickens. Oh, Petunia, she said, my chicks and I have been for a long walk in the woods, and I think I've lost some of them. The farmer says I has 9, but I can't count so very well. Please, wise Petunia, count my chicks to see if they're all there. Glad to help, said Petunia. Let's see. 3 chicks at the drinking fountain, 3 at the feeder, 3 about your legs. Now, 3 times 3... that makes 6. 6, said Ida. 6? That's less than 9. That's more than 9, not less, said Petunia. Lots more, my dear. More than 9? Good gracious! As if I hadn't enough worries with my own 9 chicks. And where do those other chicks come from? Oh, dear, I'll never be happy again. Poor, worried Ida. But Petunia had other things to do. Besides the hedgerow, she met Straw, the horse, who was in pain from a toothache. Petunia, groaned Straw, I'm dying. Surely with your wisdom you can stop this horrible pain. Glad to help, said Petunia. Open your mouth. Why, you poor Straw, all these teeth. No wonder you have a toothache. Look at me. Do I have teeth? Of course not. I have no toothache. I am going to stop that pain right now. I'm going to pull out all your teeth, all of them. Get me some pliers. But Straw would not wait for pliers. He was so afraid to lose all his teeth that he never talked above his toothache. Excuse me. He was so afraid to lose all his teeth that he never talked of his toothache to another soul. He suffered in silence. Poor, forlorn horse. There he is, running away from Petunia so he couldn't take out all his teeth. But Petunia had other things to do. Cotton the kitten went up the tree, but could not come down. While he meowed and meowed, his friends called for Petunia. Glad to help, said Petunia. I know just what to do. Since none of you is tall enough to reach Cotton, all of you will do it together. Donkey on top of Clover, the cow, Pig on top of Donkey, and so on up. So Donkey climbed on top of Clover, Pig climbed on top of Donkey, Goat on top of Pig, Sheep on top of Goat, Piggy on top of Sheep, Turkey on top of Piggy, Duck on top of Turkey, Hen on top of Duck. Suddenly Clover cried out, stop! My legs feel wobbly! And she sat, and Donkey and the rest fell into a heap, and Cotton was so scared that he fell on top of all of them. Well, said Petunia, Cotton is down. So he was, poor bruised kitten. There he is. He had fallen on top of all the other animals. But Petunia had other things to do. Getting prouder all the time, she felt her neck stretch out even further. She wandered down the meadow when she found some friends gathered around a box. "Oh, wise Petunia," they shouted, "we found this box in the ditch beside the road. Maybe it's food, Petunia. Please tell us what the writing on it says." "Well, glad to help," said Petunia. "Now let's see." "Why, candies. That's what it says on that box. Yes, candies. You may eat them. Yes, of course." No sooner had Petunia given the word than seven greedy mouths tore up the box and grabbed the candies out of it, and kaboom! And all the animals went flying through the air. What a sight the animals were. Some were burned, some were bruised. Poor Straw the horse still suffered in silence. Ida still worried about her chicks. Poor kitten named Cotton was on crutches because his leg hurt so much. All the barnyard was in trouble. You know what was in that box? Firecrackers. Petunia's pride and wisdom had exploded with the firecrackers. Her neck had shrunk back to its old size and was all bandaged up. She was the most downhearted of all, for she saw now that she was not a bit wise. But suddenly, Petunia spied the book. The firecrackers had blown it open so that the pages showed. She had never seen them before. Now she saw that there was something written inside the book, which she could not read. So she sat down and thought and thought and thought until at last she sighed. "Now I understand it. It was not enough to carry wisdom under my wing. I must put it in my mind and in my heart. And to do that, I must learn to read." Petunia was filled with joy. At once she began to work so that one day she could be truly wise. Then she would make her friends happy. And that's the end of Petunia the Goose, who was not so silly anymore, was she? Our next story is about two sheep, Bobwa and William, by David Elliott. This is William. He is a sheep. You will note that William is reading. Now, there are not many sheep who read, but William is one of them. This is Bobwa, who is also a sheep. In the picture, Bobwa is knitting. Knitting is a very practical hobby for a sheep. It's surprising that not more of them do it. Oh, well. Bobwa and William are best friends. They spend most of their days reading and knitting. Knitting and reading. Sounds kind of boring, doesn't it? But they like it. One day, William looked up from his book, an adventure story, pirates, treasure chests, that sort of thing. "I've been thinking," he said to Bobwa. "Thinking is good," Bobwa answered, "or so I've heard." "We should have an adventure of our own," said William. "Agreed," said Bobwa. "There are only so many sweaters that one sheep can knit." And so the two friends set off. The day was perfect for such a thing. The flowers were blooming. The sun was shining. The birds were singing. The last bit about the birds was especially good because adventures usually involve some kind of trouble, and it's nice to have a little bird song to help you through it. There was, however, a problem. Bobwa and William lived in a field, and the field was surrounded by a stone wall. "Which way?" asked William. "You decide," Bobwa answered. "Left, then," said William. Bobwa thought they should have gone right, but he didn't say so. The two sheep walked around the field, once, twice, three times. Is this what the adventures are like? Bob asked. All this walking, I mean. I don't know, said William, but I do know it's making me hungry. Me too, Bob replied. Grass, anyone? And so they decided to have a snack. The two friends were just finishing their snack when, quite unexpectedly, they were approached by a third sheep. A sheep with a long, rangy tail. A sheep with a sharp, whiskered snout. A sheep with a filthy wool coat. Hey there, Mutton Chop, said the sheep, who was really a wolf in sheep's clothing. What's shaken? And when he grinned, Bob's heart broke. His mother had never taught him to brush his teeth. We've been looking for an adventure, William said. Look no longer, the new sheep said. You have found one. And he snapped his hard teeth most unexpectedly. Run, said William. It's that wolf in sheep's clothing that I've read about. If this is an adventure, said Bob, I'm not a fan. Oddly, the bird song did not seem to help that much right now. Suddenly the wolf stopped his shenanigans. Let's quit this nonsense for a minute, he said to William. I'm interested in that thing you said earlier. What thing? Asked William. That thing about me, said the wolf. William thought for a moment. Not sure, I'm sure, he said. But Bob's memory was better than William's. He said, he's read about you, she said to the wolf. The wolf's eyes, which up to now had been kind of shifty-looking, grew round and large. Is it true, he asked William, have you actually read about me? See for yourself, said William. He reached into his backpack and pulled out a book. The wolf took a step backwards. He looked at the blue sky. He looked at the green grass. He looked at the big stone wall. But he did not look at the book. Oh, dear, said William, I see the problem. What problem, said the wolf. There's no problem. You can't read, can you, said William. The wolf howled a mournful, wolfy howl. He dropped his shaggy lupine, which means wolf, head. Bob's heart broke for a second time as salty lupine tears fell on the soft ground. It's not my fault, the wolf cried. I'm just not the reading kind. William can teach you, you know, said Bob. The wolf lifted his head and looked at William. Would you, asked the wolf, would you do that for me? Well, William didn't seem so sure. Of course he would, said Babwa, and in the meantime I'll knit you a new coat. This one is a disgrace. It is so dirty. So William went about the business of teaching the wolf to read. It wasn't easy. Here the wolf is sitting on a tree stump, and William has a blackboard leaned against another tree, and he's writing words for the wolf to try to learn to read and to copy in his little notebook. So he's written little and pigs and red and riding and hood. The wolf often jumped up in the middle of a lesson and chased the two sheep around the field. Now this irritated William no end. Don't let it get to you, William, said Baba. He is just following his nature. Besides, all that reading and knitting has taken its toll. We can use the exercise. Eventually, after a lot of hard work and several extra help sessions, the wolf did learn to read. And when he saw what the book had said about him, he was outraged. This is so unfair, he complained. It says here that I'm cruel and sneaky. And your point, said William. It's not true, the wolf insisted. I'm just rambunctious. Well, that's one word for it, said Babwa. And so, over time, an unlikely friendship formed between the wolf and the two sheep, one that involved a fair amount of chasing. But there were quiet times, too. One afternoon, When the wolf was on the second volume of a new book series that he liked, and the two sheep had shed quite a few pounds, William said to Bavois, "This has been quite an adventure, after all," he said. Bavois put down his knitting, a set of jazzy leg warmers for the wolf. "I agree," she replied, "much better than pirates." The wolf looked up from his book. "Can you two chattercheeks keep the noise down?" he said. "I'm reading over here." And there he was, reading his book with the two sheep, sitting out on the beautiful green grass under a tree. Our next book is called I'm in Charge by Jean Willis. There was once a little rhino who was really rather large, and from the day that he was born, he bellowed, "I'm in charge." So when his darling daddy tried to tell him what to do, he cavorted and he snorted, yelling, "I'm in charge, not you." And when his muddy mother told him that it was time for bed, he shouted, "No, I will not go. I'm in charge," he said. He did exactly as he pleased, and he threw his weight about. When Warthog tried to cross his path, he tossed him with his snout. He scattered all the meerkats, and he startled poor Giraffe. He squashed Baboon's banana when he would not give him half. What a mean little rhino. Elephant was larger, but young rhino did not care. It wasn't hard to change her if she could not see him. It wasn't hard to charge her if she could not see him there. He sneaked up to the waterhole and gave his tail a thrash, then barged into that elephant's bottom. "I'm in charge," he said. Kersplash! The elephant landed in the water. And so it went until the day he found the mango tree. He didn't want to share the fruit. He said, "It's all for me." He put his little foot down, and if anyone came by, he shouted, "Shoo! No fruit for you. I'm in charge, that's why." So none of the other animals who were gathered round the wonderful mango tree could get any mangoes. There was enough for everybody, though. But no one dared to challenge him. Then Pygmy Mouse came by. She was tiny, but so hungry that she thought she'd have to try. "No, you are not in charge," she said. "The fruit is ours to eat." But Rhino would not listen, and he stamped his feisty feet. "I'm not listening, la, la, la. I'm in charge." "Agreed," he yelled. And so he never heard the sound of a stampede. "Stand back," said Mouse to Rhino. "You'll be sorry if you don't." But Rhino took no notice. "Not a chance," he said. "I won't. This fruit is mine, all mine," he said. "I'm not afraid of you. There's nothing that I'm scared of. No one tells me what to do." Pygmy Mouse then backed away as Rhino ate some fruit. "I'm glad you know who's boss," he grinned, "the greedy little brute." Mouse waved her tiny paws around. "Look out, stampede," she cried. But Rhino would not hear a word and did not step aside. But then, to Rhino's horror, as he barely had his fill, 100 beefy wildebeests came rushing down the hill. Uh-oh! Too fast to stop, they thundered past. They made a dreadful sound as Rhino turned and ran away. What do you think happened? The tree fell to the ground. "Those wildebeests have wrecked my feast," cried Rhino, "and my tree." Then Mouse said, "Rhino, who's in charge?" And Rhino said, "Not me." So Rhino learned his lesson, like all little rhinos should, and put himself in being in charge of being very, very good. and there are all the animals gathered around and eating all the delicious mangoes from the mango tree that has now fallen over. Our next story is called Swimmy, written by Leo Lione. A happy school of little fish lived in the corner of the sea somewhere. They were all red. Only one of them was as black as a mussel shell. He swam faster than his brothers and sisters. His name was Swimmy. One bad day, a tuna fish, swift, fierce, and very hungry, came darting through the waves. In one gulp, he swallowed all the little red fish. Only Swimmy escaped. Oh, dear, all the little fish were gone. Swimmy swam away in the deep, wet world. He was scared, lonely, and very sad. But the sea was full of wonderful creatures, and he swam from marvel to marvel. Swimmy was happy again. He saw a medusa made of rainbow jelly, a great big jellyfish, a lobster who walked about like a water-moving machine, strange fish pulled by an invisible thread, a forest of seaweeds growing from sugar candy rocks, and sea anemones who looked like pink palm trees swaying in the water. Then, hidden in the dark shade of rocks and weeds, he saw a school of little fish, just like his own. "Let's go and swim and play and see things," he said happily. "We can't," said the little red fish. "The big fish will eat us all." "But you can't just lie there," said Swimmy. "We must think of something." So Swimmy thought and thought and thought. Then suddenly he said, "I have it. We are going to swim all together like the biggest fish in the sea." So Swimmy taught all those little fish to swim together, each in his own place. And when they had learned to swim like one giant fish, he said, "I will be the eye." And here we see a big fish made of all sorts of little red fish. And there's little Swimmy, like a little black eye. And when they learned to swim like one giant red fish, off they went to enjoy the sights of the ocean. And so they swam in the cool morning water and in the midday sun and chased the big fish away. And there they go, chasing the big fish away. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, formerly known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and vision impaired. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.